Okay, here we go, everyone. Let's build this energy. Why don't you hit the music?
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. Have you ever wondered? From temples located on windswept mountain terraces to ancient monolithic structures built in unexpected locations whose patronage has long since been lost to history, the stories of the spiritual earth resound with amazing tales still untold. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I'm your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, JD of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, and HoodooHouseDetroit.com in Detroit, Michigan, bringing us today's topic, Haunted Detroit. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, JD. Make sure you're logged in to Blog Talk Radio and join the discussion via the chat. Now let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome, everybody, to the premiere episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. I can't begin to tell you how excited I am to be here tonight, sharing this with everyone, and I look forward to many, many, many more weeks of interesting people, interesting places. We're going to travel the world together. Today, we're joined by our special guest, JD, a good friend of ours from the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers. But first, I'm actually going to bounce this back to Reverend James. How are things going with you today?
Oh, things are going great. I've been working on websites lately and doing lots of vigil candles. But other than that, just enjoying this dreary weather we have here in the mountains and enjoying the pitter-patter of the rain on the metal tin roof that we have on our sunroom.
It's definitely been a very dreary winter here in the mountains of North Carolina. But now I'd like to bring in our guest for this week, our premier guest, none other than JD. How are you doing today, JD?
Thank you for having me as a guest. I'm really excited to be here, and even more so for the first episode. So this is really awesome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's definitely my pleasure. You know, what's new in your neck of the woods?
Well, it's funny you guys were talking about dreary because we just had an ice storm out of nowhere, so that was fun. I've been doing a lot of work for clients on cleansing relationships, a lot of people needing assistance with reconciliation, and I've also really been kind of diving into my own studies and trying to increase my own knowledge. So really just kind of enjoying winter, I guess, how you enjoy winter, you know, reading a book and, you know, just getting deep into the study.
Yes. Being a former northerner myself, I know during the winter months, there's really not a lot that we can do in the Great White North. So, you know, curling up with a good book, cup of coffee or hot chocolate, definitely a favorite pastime for myself as well.
Well, what
awesome.
Happens here is one day it'll be 50, the next day it's 20, the next day it's 30, next day it's snowing. So, you know, that's just kind of how the Midwest or that the North goes with weather. So,
yeah, some people joke that the weather's throwing out temperatures like Powerball numbers.
I have to say, like, the topic of this show has got me really excited about thinking of places where I want to go throughout the United States that are known for mystic and magical places. So as I thought about the topic, I was thinking about like places in Pennsylvania, places in New York, places in, you know, down south. Like, I'm so excited now, like actually got me planning like road trips over like the summer of where I could possibly go and where I can experience some of these things that you'll be talking about over the next couple of months over the radio show.
You know, that's one of the wonderful things about having an opportunity such as this. You know, it really helps us to bring these experiences to the listeners. It's not always in everybody's ability to visit them themselves, but they want to feel that connection. And, you know, being able to provide that in this format I'm very grateful to the LMC Radio Network for allowing this opportunity. All right. So tell us a little bit more about you, JD. How did you get into being a root worker?
Sure. So not everyone knows, but my background, I'm actually from New York City. I was born and raised there. We grew up with a house in upstate New York, which was very rural, and it was on a farm. We had a farm, and so I kind of lived between those two worlds. And I come from an Italian immigrant family. All my aunts, uncles, my grandma all immigrated over in the 1920s from Italy. So Italian Catholic culture and tradition was very prominent in my upbringing. I grew up in Staten Island, which is out of the five boroughs of New York City, is known as being, you know, the one of the Italian boroughs. You know, and just growing up, I know a lot of people call it Italian magic or they'll call it things like that, but like growing up, we never called it that. Like, you just knew there were things that you did that were considered part of our culture. For example, if someone was to compliment you in a way that seemed in vain, you would spit on the ground three times. Or, you know, if someone was to, you know, maybe compliment a baby in a way that your mother would spit on their hand three times and wipe it on the baby's face just to take away the evil eye. So, like, those are things that are raised, but you were never, like, called it, like, magic or witchcraft, you know? And as I got older, you know, I grew up in, again, New York. So we had neighbors who were Puerto Rican. So I do remember when my preteens and teens we had these neighbors who'd come over for coffee with my parents, and they would share with me their culture and their folk traditions. And it just kind of bred a passion in me to really learn about the different folk traditions outside of my family and others in my community. I can say, like, growing up in New York, I'm sorry, go on.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Like every corner store sold Novia candles, or they sold, you know, votive candles for different conditions. I mean, I remember being, you know, at my grandma's knees looking at candles that had, like, you know, how to win the lotto and how to find love. And these were just normal things that were part of everyday life. So as I got older, and I'm talking in like my teens and in my 20s, it just became something that I just became more passionate about, reading the books that I can, talking to people in the community, and really learning about different cultures and their folk traditions. And it's really something, when I really came upon hoodoo, especially living out in here in Detroit, because we actually have a really large hoodoo, you know, following, and a very large African-American community, that I realized how many of these similarities of what I was learning in New York and then within my own culture, and that it just seemed to really be something that I really connected with and wanted to learn more about.
You know, it's really interesting to me just how each of us comes to finding our path, finding our way, and, you know, the intricacies of the folk histories of all of the different cultures. It's always just outstanding to me how we, as readers and root workers, were able to bring these things together to really benefit our fellow man and woman. You know, we're really able to help them, you know, through difficult points in their lives, and bring about, you know, a more rich and fulfilling future for our clients. And I know personally that you definitely do a lot of work, a lot of really good work in Detroit, in the surrounding area, and have come very highly recommended by many.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I think one area that what makes me a little bit unique in the field, in that I was raised Catholic, but then my parents, when I was a teen, became Protestant. So I've actually kind of been raised in both. And in hoodoo, you know, there is predominantly a Protestant, and having that Catholic connection has really made some of the traditions that I still carry on from my ancestors, particularly my aunts, my uncles, my grandma, you know, working with saints and, you know, working altars for the saints and how to petition them, really goes directly back to how I was taught as a kid from them, straight from Italy. So it's a unique blend, but like, I'm happy that I've had that experience, because, you know, now that I look back, I'm just glad that I was able to experience both ends of this.
That's really phenomenal to have had that, generational sort of exposure to the traditions of your family. So many of us, you know, when we're young, we don't really think about it. It's like, oh, you know, grandma's doing her thing again, or, you know, they're off there picking their herbs and stuff, and we don't really think about it. But you know, when you look back and you really take stock of all of these things that really made us who we are today, there's such a fascinating and endearing quality to that, I mean, it's really just, to me, it's outstanding. And so many of us allow these opportunities to slip by to really connect with our living elders, and taking, you know, going even a step further to researching into our ancestry and really living the life that has been our birthright for just generations. And you know, I might be just a little bit jealous that you've had, I'm gauging a little bit more of an enriching experience with knowing the history of your family.
Well, I guess I am lucky in that they immigrated over in the 1920s. So it made the connections a lot easier. I mean, I grew up with my grandma. So in my family, you know, at home with my father, with my mom and my grandma, because that's how it traditionally was done. And so my grandma, in part, raised us as well. But you just pick up on these things that you do, and you're told to do them, and you do them. And then as you get older, someone finally explains why you do them, or you catch on your own because you're like, oh, that makes sense now. Now I get it. But, I mean, it was a great experience. And, you know, obviously being in a city where, you know, Italian culture was very prominent, it made it easier. But when I moved to Michigan, we have a decent amount of Italians out here, but it was definitely a culture shock and a change for me from going from a very diverse community where we had African-American neighbors, Puerto Rican, Cuban, you know, Italian, German. And then I came to Michigan and it was just more like homogeneous. And then there was the communities are more, lack of better word, segregated, right? Like in Michigan, we have things about Pole Town, which was where the Polish moved. We have an Italian area. There's little French town, like all these little areas that the immigrants moved to, and they created their own little small enclaves of community. And still to this day, you can go to those communities, and it's very much like Hamtramck is one, where it's like you're literally in like a mini Poland where they speak Polish. The food is phenomenal. And so it's a lot of fun.
I'm personally, I'm a very big foodie. So I am very much interested in hearing more about food at any point in time. But, you know, one thing I do know, you're a very adept worker when it comes to your root work and your root work prescriptions and such. And I've seen this in action on the Lucky Mojo forum as well. You know, what are some of your favorite sort of conditions to work for or work on?
Well, I get a lot. Sometimes I feel like conditions choose you. You don't choose them. So
Good I point.
Get a lot of clients for reconciliation, for love work, for peace and tranquility. My second area that I seem to get a lot of work towards is for money and prosperity. Those and then I guess followed by uncrossing. I actually don't get a lot of people who ask me to curse people, which is, you know, nice. Some areas that I do have really good, strong workings with in calling in, like we're talking about my Catholic tradition, in that I do have really strong working relationships with St. Anthony. That's a saint I've known my entire life since I was a kid. It's not uncommon to say, St. Anthony, please come down. What's been lost must be found. And you'll find it right away, and then you thank him. This has happened my entire life. Like, I call it the unfailing prayer of St. Anthony because it works every time. I have experienced, you know, I'm sorry?
No, just said that's fantastic.
And it works every time. And that's the great thing. And funny, the other day, in fact, one of my favorite stories is I was at a dance and a girl lost her necklace and it wasn't hers. It was her mother's, and she didn't ask for permission, but she wore it anyway. And she was just freaking out. And I just remember just saying over and over in my head, St. Anthony, find this necklace. She got home the next day. I seen her at school. The necklace somehow broke off her neck, but somehow got stuck in her shirt and was there all the way till she got home when she took her shirt off and found it. Like, phenomenal. I don't know. He's just amazing.
The intercession is real, folks.
Saint Expedite is another saint that I have a great relationship with and I love working with, along with Saint Jude and Saint Joseph. There's some really great...
Saint Expedite's one that I am quite a bit of familiarity with myself.
Which one?
So Saint Expedite's one that I have a lot of familiarity with myself. Over the years, we've developed quite a good relationship. So I'm always very intrigued with, you know, the history of Saint Expedite and his workings and just how fast he actually does come through.
I can tell you, I was in a really bad work situation. It wasn't good, and I was going back to work, and I was just desperate. And I set up the altar. I prayed to Saint Expedite, and I had no options, nothing on the table. Like, I didn't have phone calls, interviews, nothing. Within 3 days, I had three interviews, and by the end of the week, I had three job opportunities. I mean, it was that quick. And so since then, he's been my, like, very much go-to. So, wonderful saint.
You know, a lot of people do. I will see it on not just the forum, but, you know, we'll see it on social media and such too. Everybody petitioning Saint Expedite. And, you know, one of the questions that we get, and I know you've got such a good relationship in working within the Catholic tradition, working with the saints. You know, a lot of people ask, what do I need to do to get started working with the saints? And you always give such great information on the forum, and I'd like you to share that with our listeners today.
Sure. I think the first thing that people, and actually this advice is something that Miss Cat herself has posted, honestly, I'm really quoting her. But one, saints are spirits, and spirits have personalities, and they have relationships, and just like us. If your neighbor comes to your door and bangs on it and screams, "Give me a job," are you going to give it to him? You know, I mean, it's all about the relationship. And my advice often to people when they want to start working with a saint isn't to run in there, you know, demanding what they want, but rather spend at least a week getting to know who that is. So, for example, when I started with Saint Expedite, I lit a candle, I set a glass of water, I set some flowers, and I just prayed, "Saint Expedite, I wish to connect with you." And I just offered up prayers to the saint, showing that I was loyal, giving almost like a promise, like, "See, here I am, I'm doing it now, so I'll obviously follow through." And then when I did the work, I asked for something that I needed, and I just put the faith and the trust in it. And then when I got the results, I immediately paid the saint for the work. So in case of Saint Expedite, in my opinion, he loves Sara Lee pound cake. I've tried other pound cake. That's just the one he seems to prefer. He doesn't like the others. Red roses, and also publishing his name, which you can do right on the Lucky Mojo forum, because they actually offer, they have a thank you Saint Expedite. Oh, and the other key thing that is important that I've noticed a difference in is using authentic Saint Expedite oil. So you want to make sure that the oil you use isn't just some generic oil, but like Lucky Mojo's Bite Oil is a phenomenal oil. And I've had great success using that oil on my candles. So I would dress the candle. Saint Expedite likes threes. So when you prepare the candle, you put three holes in it, and then you would pour the oil in the three holes, and you'd set his altar up in a three. So you would have the glass of water to the front left. You'd have his candle to the back center, and then you would have a photo or a statue of him to the front right.
So set the altar in threes, and like Reverend James called out in the chat, that when you were working with St. Expedite, he came through in triplicate as well. So everything
yeah.
happens for a reason.
But in general sense, I mean, I just kind of, oh, I'm sorry. I went on a tangent about St. Expedite. He's just a saint I love working with, but when I see other people talking about other saints, some things or even spirit guides that they want to work with, I think the first thing that they need to consider is building a relationship, connecting with them. And the first thing to do that is spending communal time with them. So setting a candle, setting it with maybe spirit guide or psychic vision oil, having that candle lit with water and flowers. It's very common to offer food as well, especially if you're doing this for your ancestors, to give them growth and to give them spiritual energy. And just pray to lift them up and spend a week doing that. And then ask them if they're willing to work with you. And you can actually go as far as to ask them, will you work for me? Please give me a sign that I will know and recognize. And in often case, within the next day or so, you will actually have a sign that speaks of it.
Yeah, that's one thing that I actually, you know, in building these relationships and such, I personally, I like to use a pendulum and try to connect, you know, will you work with me? Have my offerings been, you know, of adequate amount or adequate, you know, substantiation? And, you know, generally, you know, over time, you really can build these relationships up to reach phenomenal levels. It always amazes me. And like I said, you know, you've given such great information on the forum and here now that, you know, I feel I'm learning much from you.
Oh, thank you. I think the forum is actually a great place for anyone to actually start learning. If you're new to hoodoo or you're new to spiritual practices and you want to learn, I mean, we're talking thousands of pages with expert advice, with questions and answers that really can teach people. And it's actually provided by Lucky Mojo free. So I really do encourage people, and I actually share this with clients all the time when they have, you know, maybe they have a lover issue. I'm like, well, here's a forum where you can learn all about those type of lover issues. And or I meet students or people who are like, well, I want to do root work too. Where can I learn? Well, here's where you can start. So, I mean, and you look at even at the Lucky Mojo website with all of the free information that they've provided. I mean, it really is a wonderful learning platform. So I do want to give that shout out because I really do think that if you are interested in this type of work, if you're interested in spiritual work, if you're interested in working with saints or your ancestors or spirit guides, I mean, there's so much information on there for you already.
You know, in conjunction with the Lucky Mojo Forum, there's also a plethora of information that's available at readersandrootworkers.org. You know, the AIR team goes to great efforts to put out really well-written and reasoned metaphysical, spiritual, magical information. There are so many pages. I think if I remember correctly, there's somewhere in the vicinity of about 680 pages now of just free information that's out there for people to learn and grow.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's just, it's really, and it's just offered for free. It's there for all to use and all to benefit.
And I can tell you, as being a member of AIR, as so are you, that I frequently will send people there for information like, well, you're interested in this saint or you're interested in this god or goddess, you're interested in this tradition. Well, here is a page filled with information where you can learn about it. Which a lot of people don't know, but they Air has all the Songs of Solomon's written out with all of the uses for them, all 150. So people who want to incorporate that into their candle magic, it's right there for you at your fingertips. All you have to do is look and incorporate it and ultimately really in enhancing your work. One of the great writers, Henry Gamachi, who wrote the, what was his book? It wasn't The Art of Candle Work. What was his book? Well, his one book,
Guiding Light,
is so good about
The Master Book of Candle Burning.
Thank you for getting it. Yes, that's what I was thinking, The Master Book of Candle Burning. I mean, one of the greats of that book is how he incorporates the Psalms along with the use of candles and even how he moves them. And it's such a fantastic read. And then to add on that, we have The Art of Hoodoo Candle Magic, which really expands on that work. The use of Psalms is so important in hoodoo, and it is used so frequently. I just love that it's right there so easily for everyone to, like, connect with. I literally send that to clients all the time. I'm like, please go here. Oh, you have a problem? Well, let's start here.
It does. It provides a great foundation, too, especially for when someone's looking to connect with a reader or connect with a root worker, to kind of to build that foundation and allow the relationship between the worker and the client to really reach new heights. When you're speaking that same language, it definitely helps things to go exponentially better and further than, you know, just kind of like a cold calling sort of a situation. That's been my experience. And I love that you brought up Gamache's book. You know, I think I've read it maybe four times now, four or five.
Uh-huh.
It's sitting near me at some point in time, at all points in time. It's really a phenomenal book. Candle magic being one of my favorite things to do. I enjoy the moving candle spells and, you know, the setting the lights and everything. And you can't get a better tome than Gamache's book.
One thing I like about his book, and Miss Kat talks about this on the forum before, about like backing up your work, is like teaching. So I might be doing root work for you, but I also want to empower the client, because they want to be an active participant, and teaching them how to set a candle and to read a psalm over it and to work towards that goal is actually, like, Henry Gamachi's work has actually really helped me bring that to light. So I will often ask if a client is willing to work with and then suggest what we need to do. And I find it helps gratefully, and it especially helps with clients who are very, needy, or maybe like they're really anxious. It just gives them an outlet to put their energy into and allow them to be an active participant.
And that truly is. It's huge when it comes to performing these sorts of works, to really be able to build that connection. And, you know, I've seen you yourself be able to do this just in words over the forum. So, you know, just I know you have that ability and to build those connections, to earn that trust, and to really, you know, get the most bang for your buck, your spiritual buck, I guess we could call it. You know, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, and I do see in the chat he's posted a lot of other books as well, which I think are all phenomenal. But I see The Terror of the Evil Eye Exposed, which is a book that Lucky Mojo has reproduced that can be purchased. It's another great, fantastic book.
Oh, there's the entire series. If anyone had the opportunity to pick these books up, you know, I think I'm on my third copy now of Hoodoo Herb and Root Magic. I use them so much. I use it so much. My copies keep not surviving.
I have the same problem. I'm a bookaholic. I admit it. I have yet to find a book I don't really want. So my bookshelf is just constantly growing with books and what I want to read. And so if you have a great book out there, please send it my way, because I will probably read it and I will enjoy it.
Oh, that is one thing that I can definitely help you out on, my friend. Reverend James and myself have amassed a library of I think we're just under 4,000 physical books right now.
Mm. Okay, you might have me beat.
Comparative religion and hoodoo and, you know, Wiccan information, just psychology, philosophy, it's never ending. Feng Shui, I'm just glancing at a few titles off over my shoulder here. But, you know, it's really kind of intriguing to me. It seems like people that have had a close connection to their families and their family history really do seem to gravitate into the realm of conjure and root work and the traditional aspects of magic. Would you say that's been your experience as well?
I would, in my opinion and my experience, is that there seems to be this undertone between cultures of this folk traditions that kind of transcends religion, it transcends society, but it is this underlining tone that seems to connect, you know, these different cultures. You know, for example, I've seen in the hoodoo practices, you know, we know that there's Jewish practices, there's, you know, there's European, there's Mediterranean, there's African, there is Native, you know, there, you know, if you're down closer to the southern border, you'll even have Mexican, you know, and that, you know, when you start to look at these folk traditions, you'll start to notice that there's a lot of similarities. They're not always the same, but there's a lot of similarities. And how they're practiced and how they work with the earth, they work with, you know, the hands, they work with the spirits, they work with the ancestors. And it really just speaks to me about really where the work comes from. And it really comes from our ancestors, and it really comes from, you know, the earth and our connection to those spirits. So I have noticed that. And particularly people who are more closely associated or connected to that seem to have better connections with their ancestors and able to, but I wouldn't discourage someone if you're adopted and you don't know who your family is, or if you are, you're an only child and you don't know who your ancestors are, is that there still is that opportunity for you to build those relationships. You know, start with a simple ancestor altar, light a white candle, put a glass of water, and, you know, spend time discussing and trying to connect through websites like Ancestry.com and stuff. You can really connect and find about some of your ancestors, and even start with a simple one. Start with, like, if the only person you know was grandma, then start with grandma.
Right. And I know for myself, the genealogy trail goes a little bit cold. Once we get back to Europe and such, but James' family has been mapped out for, I believe, somewhere in the vicinity of 400 to 500 years. His family actually publishes a hardcover book that I can't remember how many pages this book is. It's thicker than the LA phone book, but it's just phenomenal to see the richness of this history. And, you know, as we're carrying on these traditions of our families, you know, it's important to bring that, to carry that light, to carry that torch. And, you know, hoodoo really speaks to that tradition, that richness, and the respect for those who have come before.
Yes, I agree.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, I think we have a take a moment now to get a message from our sponsors, and we will be back with y'all momentarily.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic contra practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychic, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
All right. Thank you, Reverend James, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Fantastic organizations that if y'all haven't had the chance to or the opportunity to yet, check them out. I really implore you to take a moment and check out their pages. So many great individuals that are out there to work with and for their clients to ensure the best possible futures. All right. So now we're going to get into our topic for the evening, and that being Haunted Detroit. And JD and I had a little bit of a chance to chat about this beforehand, and I'm personally fascinated and cannot wait to hear more about these hauntings, haunted places in Detroit. You know, when you think of traditionally haunted places, you know, you might think of, you know, New Orleans or of course Salem, Massachusetts. You know, I grew up 5 hours from Detroit, and it wasn't on my radar, unfortunately, I have to say. So, you know, take it away, JD. Let's get into this.
Sure. All right. So first, I want to explain, and like, Detroit actually has a very old history. Obviously, it was a Native American land that was colonized by the French and then ultimately the English. Detroit is actually a French word for Detroit. So there's a lot of history that goes back to the city of Detroit. And even a major part of it, for example, a lot of people don't know, is that it actually played a major part in the Underground Railroad during the abolitionist and into the Civil War, because when you reach Detroit, in the winter, they would cross the Detroit River when it froze over to get to Canada to freedom.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of, so there's still places in Detroit that still have the old hiding quarters for that the slaves would go into and how they would be snuck out. Like, all of those still exist. So there's so much history in old Detroit. Detroit also happens to be a great, played a major role during Prohibition, because the mafia, especially the Purple Gang and other members, what they would do is during the winter, they would run across the river to Canada, buy the alcohol and bring it back, and then they would bootleg it. And so it became a very big area for the mafia and gangs in the 1900s. So just giving a little history that there's more to Detroit than just, what most people think. Like, actually, the city goes back well into the 1600s as a French trading post.
More than music and motor cars.
Yeah. So basing off that, what I'm going to jump into is one of my first and most famous places in Michigan that is known is the Whitney. It is one of the original five mansions still left in Detroit. and it was built by a trading post. It's French. And in this, it's been converted into a restaurant, but it's been historically known for being cursed, for being haunted. So when guests are there, lights will turn off, doors will slam, things will move. It's actually made national news several times. That is a place, it's right there on, so in New York you have Broadway, right? In Michigan we have Woodward Avenue. It's the vein that runs through the city. And the Whitney's located right off of Woodward. And it is known for having these ghost experiences that it actually makes the news frequently when, you know, people will go there, they'll record it, they'll check it out, they'll have ghost hunters come in. So it's an awesome place to visit. It's a beautiful, beautiful building.
Have you experienced it personally?
I've been to the Whitney. I didn't see anything or experience anything, but I've also heard, I have friends who've said, yes, I was there and, you know, the lights went out or this door slammed or my silverware flew. But I personally didn't experience it there.
You know, I'm a lot of people don't know this about me, but I'm very much an avid ghost hunter. I air quotes on that. I don't get into all of the technical side of it with the technology and all of that, because another thing most people don't know about me is that art and technology don't technically get along. I can break just about anything. But, you know, I'm always just enthralled at the history of these locations. You know, I've been to insane asylums. I've been to old prisons in, you know, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York. It's always just such a fascinating topic to me. And it speaks to the energy of the area too. You know, I did take a look at some pictures of the Whitney, and it's a gorgeous building, totally gorgeous building. And the restaurant's still functioning today?
Reverend James posted in the chat on how you can actually do a late night tour and a paranormal dinner tour. So that's pretty cool that he posted that.
I think that might end up being on my to-do list for 2023. I'm very much interested in finding out more. Have there ever been, like, apparitions, those sorts of things, or is it the raps, the knocks, the...
It's the psychic. They say that it's both. It's the raps. I mean, people see things moving, the lights go out, lights go on, you know, different feelings, the cold air changes. But if you're going to come up here, then I got to tell you about this cemetery you got to go to, because I've actually experienced this and I don't know how to explain it. it's called Oakwood Cemetery. It's located in Farmington, Michigan, which is about 15 to 20 miles outside of Detroit. And there's a hill that you go down, and when you go down it, you put your car in neutral, your car will be pulled slowly back up the hill.
Oh, really?
And yes, like magnetically pulled back. And it's been on the news. It's had major, you know, ghost hunting people come. They've had scientists try and explain it. No one can explain why this happens. Now, the folklore in the area, the folk tradition is that a woman was trying to stop her son or daughter from getting hit by a car. And so when this car speeds past, she grabs the car and she pulls it back up the hill. That's the folk tradition. I've never really actually been able to prove that to be true. But that's, if you ask the locals, what everyone will tell you. Oh, yeah, it's this woman who pulls the car back up to prevent, you know, from getting hit or from hurting someone. But that I've experienced.
It's almost like a residual psychic energy that's fueling this phenomena.
Yeah, and there's places where they're trying, like they've had scientists there, they've had ghost hunters, they've had you name it. I mean, it's been on national news. You can read all over it. It's a wonderful phenomenon. I mean, scary, creepy at the same time.
So definitely the Detroit area is definitely growing in intrigue for myself. I've been through Detroit once, did not have the opportunity to stop, but it's definitely feeling like there's a lot more to explore than originally met the eye. So we have the Whitney
That's why I was like excited that you let me talk about Detroit, because there's so much that people don't actually know about that happens. I mean, it maybe isn't necessarily, it's Metro Detroit. Like another one I'm going to bring up is the Eloise Asylum, right? It's world renowned as well. It closed in the 1980s, but it was known for having underground tunnels where, you know, it was rumored that they lived in these tunnels and went, you know, that these people who broke through the facilities, and many died, over 7,000 died in that facility and were buried in the Eloise Cemetery.
Oh, wow.
And it is still today. They do usually around, obviously, Halloween when it's more popular. They actually do ghost hunting tours where they'll let you walk through the old asylum, which is still in its depassicated state, you know, but it's pretty interesting, you know, and you can go down into the tunnels, and because it used to be like 70 something buildings, and then they slowly shrink it down.
So it was a whole compound then.
Yeah.
So this is yet another new experience for me. Looking at the website as we speak, this is a phenomenal building. Definitely to put on the list. Do they, you know, is it something? Is it being restored, or is it safe?
That I'm not sure. I'd have to think that. I do know that they do tours, and it's very popular. There's been TV shows that have gone in there with their ghost hunting equipment and done, you know, the whole, like, you know, testing. And so it's a very popular location. There's another.
Yeah, just. Go ahead.
So there's another place that I actually want to bring up, which is it's made national news, too. It's actually became a shrine for people to actually come visit. And it's called Little Rose Chapel. And these were a small sect of nuns that followed the same following of Mother Teresa.
Okay.
And so there's a man who died out in Sterling Heights, Michigan, and there's a statue the family had, and it was of Mary, and it cried blood and oil out of its eyes, and it's done this several times. And so this statue given to the church, and it's and when I say Little Rose Chapel, I mean it's probably like 1,000 square foot, and they have this statue on display where you can actually see where the blood and the oil has come out of the eyes of the statue. So it's became kind of a relic, and it's come a known thing that people come to visit purposely to see and meet with the nuns. I've actually gone there myself and seen the statue. I've lit candles there and got to actually be blessed by the nun herself. So that was a really cool experience. It's actually located in a small suburb called Taylor, Michigan, right outside of Detroit.
See, when you hear about things like this, it's usually in some far-flung location that very few people will ever have a chance to visit. But this is right here in the United States in one of the most well-known and popular cities in the North. You know, I'm somewhat shocked I haven't heard of these myself. And the statue's on display regularly, like you can go to visit whenever?
Yep, it's still there. It's a small church, like I said, like 1,000 square foot, hence the name Little Rose Chapel. But yeah, you can go in. They still hold services. They still, it's 24/7. You can go in at any time you want. You can pray. You can light candles. But they still have the statue and everything there. And you can see the photos of the statue and read more about it at the building. But yeah, this kind of made national news too. Is another big one. And it's not as known as some of the other ones. That's kind of why I wanted to share that one. Like, if you want to talk about hidden gems, that's one of the hidden gems of Detroit that people don't know about. Like, it's made news and it's known locally, but it's not as known outside of Michigan, you know? So that's a cool one to share.
Yeah, and thank you very much, actually, for bringing that to the show. It's something most people don't even know what's in their backyards half the time. And, you know, growing up, like I said, only 5 hours away from Detroit, never hearing of this. I'm absolutely floored. It kind of reminds me of something that occurred once upon a time when I was living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. In a little suburb area, there was a statue that started to display much the same behaviors. It started to bleed from the eyes. It was a statue of Mary. And it became very popular very quickly in the local borough. But when, you know, word was sent up the line through, you know, the diocese up and above, the next thing you know, they showed up with boxes and packaged up the statue and closed down the chapel, and that's all she wrote, and it just disappeared. So to be able to actually experience this in another location, that's exciting to me. That, you know, it's obviously, you know, it's there for the people.
You just actually reminded me that another unique thing about the church is that they have prayer cards from the founder, and in the bottom is a little square of dirt from her grave. So anyone could come in and get one for free, and it has the Little Rose Chapel prayer, and it has the founder of the chapel and a little bit of square of her dirt. You know, and then we're connecting this with hoodoo, with, like, you know, obviously working with dirt and graveyard dirt and such. So just a really another interesting attribute of this church that you don't see in your mainline Catholic churches.
Right. And as you know, a little bit of graveyard dirt can go a long way.
Like, when's the last time you got a prayer card with the saint dirt in it, you know? So and they give out rosaries for free. So if anyone needs a rosary, they're always free. And they allow you to write light candles. I've done many candles there before.
You know, this sounds like it'd be a very healing experience, a very, like, uplifting and engaging experience to actually be able to participate. Having visited, I mean, what's the sense that you get when you enter this church?
So, like I said, it's like 1,000 square feet, so it's small. And so it has a few pews, but it's very stacked to the left, to the right, to the back, to the front. They do service. They do communion. The nuns live next door. I've actually been there once where I walked in on service and was invited in by the nuns, and, you know, they gave me tea and then they kissed and blessed my forehead. So, I mean, it's a very sweet place. Like, I've gone there several times. particularly, you know, to light a candle and to just see what's, you know, like, for example, they have a St. Anthony statue there that I loved. So what I would do is I would take a petition for St. Anthony and I would light a votive candle and I would stick it under the candle after I lit it and I would pay the box for my donation. And then, you know, I would leave.
You know, that's actually, I have a feeling that it would be very calming to walk into the chapel. You know, just in talking about it, I'm kind of overcome with like this sense of peace. And it's kind of speaking to me on several levels. I was also raised Catholic. So it's part of my history and part of my heritage. And I'm very thrilled to know that this exists and is within a stone's throw of a drive. It's a day trip. It's, and from the chat, it's Catholic Old Home Week.
Well, you could go to the Whitney and have dinner, and then you can go by the cemetery and see if your car goes up a hill. And then when you're done, you can go to Little Rose Chapel and set a candle.
it's a metaphysical date night.
Yeah. But that's one of the things I think people, like you said earlier, you know, we think New Orleans, we think all these different places. Well, Detroit has a very deep history, and that history is still alive within the buildings and the community. And this is just one of those examples where, you know, there's a little church that's hitched away in a little suburb where, you know, it's a pilgrimage where people come from all over to experience it.
That's just outstanding. I'm really intrigued. I mean, we've talked about the Whitney. We've talked about Eloise Asylum, which I keep returning to just because it's very, very interesting to me. Having toured the Hillview Manor just outside of Pittsburgh, which was originally an insane asylum that became a halfway house. So it had a very interesting history on both fronts. The Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in West Virginia, which probably to this day has been one of the most active places I've ever visited. You definitely get the knocks and the raps and things of that nature, but as you walk through halls, you also get the hair pulls and voices, disembodied voices, things. And it's the spirits really come out for you when you visit the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. So I'm eagerly anticipating adding the Whitney and Eloise Asylum to my list of adventures.
Oh yes, you must go. It's a must. It's still in its original form. Like, it's like they closed the doors and they didn't touch anything. So it's like the perfect place to go searching for your haunt.
You know, a lot of people have mentioned to me, and you know, having been a working medium for many years now, that they get so disappointed when these buildings are renovated and brought back to kind of like what they were like in their heyday. Kind of going on now with the Mansfield Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio. You know, they're putting a lot of efforts into making it safe for people to go through and tour, but the energy still persists. The energy is still there, and it's there for you to experience. You know, it really does add, I think, I mean, yeah, you'll have your thrill seekers, that enjoy the jump scares and so on and so forth. But it really does add a depth to your understanding of the connection of the world and the spirit realm and our connection to spirit, just to experience the energies that these places put off.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you can put all the paint and plaster you want on the wall, but it doesn't change what happened there. You know, it takes a lot more than paint and plaster to change the energy and the community and what's going on in the building, so or in an area.
Do they also, just out of curiosity, do they allow seances and such in these venues, do you know?
I wouldn't think the Little Rose would. I mean, you could probably get away with it if you went in during, like I said, it's open 24/7. So if you went in a time when service wasn't planned, you'd probably be free to do what you want. The cemetery, you'd probably be fine. The Whitney, well, James posted on how they have times where you can do that. I don't know about the sale asylum. That would be an interesting one to see.
In my experience in a lot of these venues, they actually prohibit that sort of a practice on the premises just to ensure that nothing else gets stirred up.
Yeah, they probably don't want the attention.
Definitely.
Like the Whitney, which is like a, you know, very five-star restaurant. I mean, they benefit from it, but do they also want a fans? I don't know. We do have another cool cemetery called the Gangog Cemetery, which is in Westland, Michigan, which is located on Henry Ruff Road. And it's a pretty rough, literally, cemetery. And this one is also known for, on rainy nights particularly, the people in the community will report that ghosts or objects are coming out that jump in front of their cars during the rain. And there's also, if you go in the cemetery, there's a story of a woman with chains, and she's wearing white, and you can hear the rattling and the smacking of the chains on the ground, which is pretty interesting as well.
And
I've actually
worth
been there. I've actually went there once when I was younger with a ghost hunting crew. It was actually really cool. And like, we heard the chains. We didn't see anyone running around. We didn't see anything moving around. But we did hear the chains. And then I remember it was so weird. Like out of the blue, you seen like, I wouldn't call it steam, but it was like steam just out of the blue was coming out of nowhere and just, you know, phosphoring around us, you know, and like, but you could see it like producing and then it kind of just dissipated. It was so, I've never seen that before anywhere else. I mean, it was like a huge grayish blue and it just kind of appeared and was articulated before us and then just kind of faded away. And the people we were on the crew with were like, oh, you know, there was that was a spirit. And I mean, I was young, so I don't know if that necessarily was, but it definitely, I've never seen it happen again. And I've been to many cemeteries. So,
you know, when you're in root work and as a root work practitioner, you have a kind of a connection, especially if it's in your history, it's in your ancestry. We have a connection to cemeteries and you know, graveyards for work. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me that of the entire group that you're with, that this happened to you. You know, you're the right place, right time, right person.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I was glad I was with friends. have you seen orbs, you know, and I know that's like a contentious topic in like ghost hunting, but like I've legit seen them over, like seen them in my own eyes, like floating over like a cemetery. Like, and actually that was the Gangog Cemetery that I was talking about when we were there. So when people are like, oh, the orbs were like, you know, dust particles that got, you know, light reflected on it. I'm like, well, no, there was no light there. And trust me, maybe there was dust particles, but how did they start glowing? So I've actually experienced that, where I disagree that there are, you know, these orbing dust particles that there's definitely.
Now, orb phenomena is actually one of those things that when you look – invariably, if somebody's looking at a photo and there's an orb, it's up. That was just, what do they call it, lens flare or this. But to actually experience it live and in person, to see them just there, the majesty of them floating through the air, you know, around their family units, it's really kind of awe-inspiring. And you know, for myself, a lot of times I experience this as if I'm going there to do work. It's almost like a welcoming committee. So you walk through the gates, everybody says hi. But it really, it's a very humbling experience to see. And I also disagree with people that say that, you know, it's a dust particle. That's a pretty big dust particle to reflect that
exactly.
Much light that in the middle of the night.
And when they're happening in unison around each other, and then they have like the almost like the comet trail as they move, like what is this dust doing? You know, so I've never really believed that, but I've always believed it to be a cemetery energy or spiritual energy coming out of there as well. But
yeah,
that was
and you can feel it. You can just feel it, and you can sense it. It's there, and I'm sure that many experience this without really being able to have the words to put to describe what they're seeing and what they're feeling when they experience this. I find it kind of funny when, you know, if the gadgets can't pick it up, that those of us who are out there with our pendulums and our dowsing rods and, you know, actually using their mediumship and their extrasensory perception abilities are able to see things that the gadgets can't. The gadgets
do
have their specs, though. I will give them that. Have you actually, the team that you were there with, were they the super high-tech kind with the voice boxes and all of that?
And recording and everything, yeah. It was a cool group. I mean, it was like a one-time thing that I went on, but you know, they were focused on other things than me and my friends were focused on. We were kind of like going in our own way and just kind of exploring. And I mean, we did a lot of those actually as teens into my mid-20s. Like I said, exploring a lot of these haunted places in Michigan and seeing what we see, feel, you know. So, I mean, it was really cool. I enjoyed it. I've seen some weird things, like I said, you know, like a car pulling itself up the hill. That's probably the top one for me. Seeing these, you know, these glow things, or not glow, this like, it was like someone was blowing steam air out of the blue, but it was like happening right in front of your face. And it just kind of happened, and no one can explain it, you know?
Right. You know, I think it's actually really interesting too, the prevalence of the story of the woman in white. It's something I've noticed in a lot of discussions, you know, just every area, it seems every region has some variation of a woman in white story. And I mean, myself included, in Pennsylvania, there was talk of a woman that used to cross over. It was an old covered bridge that she unfortunately ended her life on. But if you were to go out there at the right time of night, you would actually see her walking up and down this bridge and hear the footfalls as she would go. Unfortunately, the bridge was taken out by arsonists at one point, not too long back. So it's unable to be visited henceforth, but you know, there's something to these though. There's a commonality to them that really, it's interesting. It'd be interesting to explore the thread and the phenomena of the white woman, the woman in white, I should say. Might be an interesting discussion for a future date.
Yeah. And, a question in the chat was, if they rebuilt the bridge, would the ghost return? And that's a great question. And I honestly wonder if the ghost even left, even if the bridge is gone. Like, would it go away? I mean, its connection is still there to the earth, to the ground, to its experience. Does the bridge actually matter to the experience? Would that really lift the spirit upward? You know what I'm saying?
You know, I'd actually not considered that. And, you know, in discussions with individuals that still go to the site to this day, you know, there have been mentions of still being an active area. I hadn't gone back to visit it myself prior to moving from the region. Now I think when I go back to visit, I may have to stake out a spot and just observe myself. It's actually been really fascinating kind of hearing the history of Detroit, and it really floors me how similar it is to where I grew up in Pennsylvania. You know, there's a lot of similarities in the history and the activities that were going on, although I know people used to be able to drive out onto Lake Erie. I've never heard any stories of people walking across to Canada. That kind of floors me a little bit. I never considered that being possible. I guess you think running water, you don't going to become a path.
So what in Michigan, a lot of people call so that you have the Great Lake that leads into Lake St. Clair, which leads into what's called the Detroit River. But the Detroit River is actually not a river. It's a strait, the Trois de Gaulle, which means river of the strait in French. So if you were to sit at the end of downtown Detroit, you could literally look right over into Windsor. I mean, people swam across it. So in the winter, and it's very shallow. There's parts where it's maybe a foot deep. So when it freezes over during the prohibition, they would run across and then run back. And then there's, you know, and like I said, during the, you know, the abolitionist movement, that they would actually, this was a major part of moving slaves out of the United States, especially after the Slave Trade Act, where they would try to move them to get into safe territory, the Fugitive Slave Act. Sorry, that's what I was trying to think of. So it has a huge history of the river being used in whether moving people or moving products. And that's part of what gives some of Detroit its beauty and its history is like these, like, for example, you can actually go to a church in Detroit where they will actually take you for a tour through buildings of the Underground Railroad and put you in the rooms and in the hiding spots that these the Africans were in to get to freedom. And I mean, there's a lot of think about the spiritual energy that exists in those buildings, you know. As I mentioned earlier, the Whitney is one of the original five mansions. We call them the five mansions of Detroit that still exist that hasn't been torn down. There's only five still existing.
Do you know offhand the when the Whitney was built?
Not offhand.
It's something I'm going to have to look up. It intrigues me because these old mansions that have survived the test of time. It's almost like that the spiritual energy that we experience today. It's like it's what held it together, almost.
Yeah,
this is my experience.
Says it was completed in 1857 ish, and completed in 1894.
Wow, so it took almost 40 years to build? I have to see this place. Hey, maybe we should co-host some events there. Come visit Detroit and co-host some events.
Cool. We should do that. We should definitely see if we can find a spirit who wants to talk with us on the radio, too.
You know, a really quick aside. You know, one time while exploring, this was actually happened in Mansfield at the Reformatory. You know, one of my friends who actually was the one to put the overnight experience together had one of the ghost boxes that would allow spirits to have a voice. And we ended up in one room in the basement of the building, and the ghost box kept calling out, "Hey, red pants, hey, red pants." And we're looking at each other, and none of us had on red pants. And, you know, I joke about the technology side of it, but, you know, everybody's like, well, this thing, it has to be wrong. It has to be wrong. And it wasn't until it was about an hour later, we were all taking a break, and they have a lounge area set up for you. We're talking about what's going on with "Hey, red pants," and that's when it was realized that a friend of mine that had come with me on the trip was actually wearing red underwear.
Ooh.
And the spirits were pulling that through and trying to get his attention the entire time we were down in this basement. So, you know, you never know what signs you're going to get. And that just reinforced to me not to doubt too vehemently what's coming across on the technology or on the psychic side of things.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great point. And as we were talking earlier about building relationships and connecting with spirits and spirit guides, is that that's a great point, is that sometimes the message isn't always as clear. You might be dreaming of something, seeing something, hearing something, and it doesn't make sense to you, but through exploratory, you know, practices, you might find, like, you know, why am I thinking of the name Antoinette? Why is this constantly popping up? And then through research, you find out, well, your great-grandma's name was Antoinette. Or, you know, you might find that there's a food you're drawn to and you don't understand why. And there's no reason why you want this random food. But when you look into your family history and you talk to your family, you find out this is something that was traditional in your culture. and it was something that was often ate during celebrations, and it's really a sign that your ancestors or your this spirit is asking for that from you. You know, so like you said, like red underpants or red pants, like you got to listen to the message, and sometimes you got to think outside of the box and what the message could be conveying, because it's not always as clear in our mind's eye as it is to us after we do that investigation or divination or, you know, pray over it and ask for explanation.
Very true. Well, this, I think we have effectively put Detroit onto the paranormal activity map of the United States, and I really want to thank you for bringing this topic tonight. I've learned a lot, and I am extremely excited to come and visit Detroit in the very near future. And just to let everybody know, JD will be a speaker at the upcoming Hoodoo Heritage Festival for 2023, sponsored by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers and Association of Independent Spiritualist Churches. It's going to be going on June 10th and 11th. Tickets are already on sale. And come see JD, myself, Reverend James, Ms. Kat, and so many other wonderful presenters for the Hoodoo Heritage Festival. Do you have anything else coming up, JD?
No, I'm really focused on making sure that the festival is a success and just working on that. And, you know, me, you, James, Kat, Shiva, everyone have been working very hard on that. So I'm really looking forward to having a really successful and fantastic festival.
It's going to be a great time.
Of course, all of you coming out of Detroit so we can go to the Whitney and see the ghost.
Right on. Well, that's all the time we have for tonight. I hope everyone has enjoyed their time with us this evening. And until next time we meet, keep the magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, JD, of HoodooHouseDetroit.com in Detroit, Michigan, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when our special guest from the Solar Moon Sisters will be Miss Beth of SolarMoonSisters.com in Cincinnati, Ohio, discussing tarot and shadow work. We've come to the end of an episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at folkconjure.com, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics Thursdays and Fridays from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from folkconjure.com in North Carolina. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. From all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics Mages and Magical Places on Facebook and Mystics Mages and Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, JD. And a special thank you to Nagashiva and Miss Kat. Good night. Blessings. And have a wonderful week, everybody.